Aloha and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we like to tell you every week, this conversation includes you. We really do mean that. And if you'd like to be involved with it, all you have to do is call us at either 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to use. And from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. Now, you already know that Hawaii's journey to renewable clean energy future is well underway. The drive to meet the state's 100% renewable energy portfolio standard benchmark year 2045 continues to bring greater understanding that it's not just about reducing consumer cost. As advocates have said for well over a decade, the need for renewable energy is just a fact of modern life for Hawaii to sustain and perpetuate itself. To that end, bills to tame or tweak the clean energy strategy fill every legislative session, with the 2017 session soon to be at the halfway point. Today on Town Square, we're going to look at what has survived so far and how two key players in Hawaii's energy story assess where we are now. Joining me today, Jeff Mikulina, Executive Director of Blue Planet Foundation, and Scott Siu, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs for HECO. Jeff Mikulina heads all aspects of Blue Planet's work to advance scalable energy policies and programs to bring clean, renewable solutions to the state. His work included the successful campaign to make Hawaii the first U.S. state with a 100% renewable energy mandate. Scott Siu oversees corporate relations and government, community, and regulatory affairs. His career with Hawaiian Electric spans 23 years in environmental compliance, customer programs, and renewable energy development. Most recently, he was the head of electric systems operations for HECO companies. And, of course, you're here, too. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to you both. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks, Beth Ann. Great to be here.
Yeah, thanks, Beth Ann.
So here we are. It's now, you know, the beginning of March 2017. We've all been talking about Hawaii's energy future for such a long time. We've seen lots of twists and turns in this story. I'm really curious how each of you sees where we are right now, and not just because we've got this 2045 energy mandate to have a renewable, you know, standard by that point, but in general, where we are and what you see through our communities. And Scott, I'll start with you. I usually start with Jeff, but I'll start with you.
Well, thanks, Beth Ann. We continue to make a lot of good progress in terms of our RPS goals. I think we're due pretty soon to issue our official filing of where we ended up 2016. I think the numbers are going to show that we're somewhere between 25 and 26% RPS as of the end of 16. So again, good progress. I think as I look forward to, 100% 2045, the biggest questions that everybody will be considering are the variety of generation renewable resources and also how we modernize our grid to be able to integrate these resources and make it work for everybody. There's a lot of discussion going on, PUC at the ledge and other areas. So that's all good. Maybe something that I'd like to come back to, after Jeff says a few things, is where we see the role of the community in terms of charting that pathway forward, because I do think that that is something that needs to be addressed more in order to be successful.
I think we're all agreement on that one. And yes, we're going to talk about that. And that's especially the part that we want you to weigh in as well. So if you want to write down our numbers, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Jeff Mikulina, how do you look out and see where we are now?
Well, a few perspectives. One, you said it's been a long road, and it has been, but we're actually moving surprisingly quick. If you go back just a decade, we've probably tripled or quadrupled the amount of renewable energy on our system from 2007, 2008 area. That's pretty fast. I mean, for a system like that that's largely, been in place for a century, this is fast. I think the question we ask is that commensurate with the speed and the scale we need with our planetary change? And that's what's motivating us. I mean, just recently it was, 50 degrees above average in the Arctic. These changes are happening faster than we imagined. We really need to rein in Hawaii's greenhouse gas emissions and then be that beacon for the globe of what we do here can really, you know, make ripples elsewhere. And that's what our 100% I think renewable energy law did, is help show others that this was possible and that we're committed to making this change. So as far as the pathway goes, I think we're making good progress. Now we're getting into some of the deeper system change issues that we really need to achieve our 100% vision.
And this is where a lot of people are going to be needed to engage, because it's not going to be something that's going to magically happen. There are going to be systems that are going to have to be changed, that's going to be brought into different neighborhoods, perhaps different ways of looking at how we do what we do to make sure that we can perpetuate ourselves. And that's not going to come without change. That's difficult for a lot of people to understand. First of all, let's take a look at what we saw come through the ledge and where we are now. Just from what you saw in bills that came through at the very beginning, both of you, to where we are now, what do you think that says about how this year's legislature is regarding the journey of renewable energy?
Well, I think you're exactly right, that we all need to go together. This is not the Hawaiian Electric companies doing their thing or a few individuals doing solar. This is everyone hooing up, being together, and moving towards a 100% clean energy future. We need the good R&D. We need the good business development. We need the policies to match. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that sort of, I should say, circumspection or real action at the legislature to put in places the policies we need to keep us on that path and to make sure that we're staying ahead of the curve, the markets, the R&D that's out there to get to 100%. Some of them are small changes, a quick fix to our renewable energy calculation. Some of them are setting new visions for, say, transportation, because we need to bring that up. Some of them are, incentives to help us, you know, add more storage to the energy grid. But all of those are pretty much in jeopardy right now. We don't see that the deep discussion and I think the forward thinking among many of the key legislators on these issues.
Scott, would you agree with that?
You know, I think what I observe generally is that, it almost seems like every session you see a certain number of bills come in for a particular issue or a technology or something like that. And I think what I observe is we need to see a more holistic approach towards charting this course. As an example, whenever we consider I'm going to use the example of net zero legislation. Sounds good, right? Generally speaking, net zero, produce as much renewable energy as you consume energy. So on the surface, it sounds very good. Support sustainability initiatives and so on. But think about it from a broader perspective of the island of Oahu, or even more broadly, Hawaii. Hawaii as a state, we are committed to getting to 100% renewable energy. What I fear is that if an individual customer, as an example, focuses only on them becoming net zero, will that enable them? Will it enable the broader community to get to 100%, or will it actually make it harder? And a specific example would be a large customer who does their own thing, and then that may prevent them from participating in demand response programs, somehow supporting the greater good of
because
of
they simply drop out and they're taking care of only their own needs.
Exactly. So I see a theme along those lines in some of the bills that were introduced this year, and that's you know, one of the issues that we've raised.
So Jeff, how would you respond to that? Because there's certainly broad agreement that we all have to get there together, but what together means really seems to be the issue.
Right. And I wouldn't disagree with Scott. I think it's easier going together than going separately, for sure. We do have to look at that systems approach. So a couple quick points. One on the net zero, there's a net zero energy homes bill to require that future homes post 2022 be net zero energy. You know, that was our bad for the title and the nomenclature. The intention of that bill was to make sure we're building the most efficient homes possible from the lens of a long-term, a homeowner, someone who has to pay both their mortgage and their utility bill every month. So the intent there was to just make sure we're being really smart about what we build up front, because you have to live with that over the life.
Yeah, and on that bill, we're on the same page with Jeff and Blue Plan in terms of, let's make sure that homes are built efficiently. Energy efficiency is a
huge
thing.
Kind of logical, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're on the same page there.
It is logical, but this is one of those challenges of having the discussion with the development community, with the real estate community, and making sure that we're all looking out for the best interests of Hawaii residents and homeowners in the future, and renters too, for that matter. Now, to Scott's point about the systems and going alone, going together, we agree, and it's a real challenge. I think the challenge is it's incumbent on the utility to make it attractive for homeowners to stay connected, to provide what you call grid services, to play a different role than maybe in the past, where they've been more of a less active participant. So I think a future customers will be more active participants, but. The onus is on the utility and our regulators to make it attractive for folks to play that role and to be in this new system.
So they don't drop out.
I do think, though, that the specter of that does provide a bit of a market nudge to make sure that we provide those the valuation of those services.
So that's a great lead into another bill, actually, that was introduced regarding the RPS. So when we talk about the utility and, the role that we have to try and make sure that customers decide, stay on the grid and everybody keep working together, there are certain things that are absolutely outside of the utility's control. And I'll use the example of large customers considering generating their own power, unfortunately, through fossil fuels. So we have customers that are, actively getting proposals from companies that are saying, hey, sign a deal with us. We'll put in a generator, a gas-fired generator, fossil fuel, and you'll be able to lower your electric bill. I sympathize with our customers. We need them to be successful as customers of ours. But it's a really difficult discussion when I talk to these customers and I say, hey, from a state energy policy perspective,
you're thwarting it.
You're thwarting it. And if you go off and do your own thing, the costs of running this system are now going to be borne by all of our other customers, our residential customers, our small businesses who don't have this alternative. And it's a really tough thing for me to say that because, again, these customers are saying, hey, Scott, believe me, I get state energy policy. I like clean energy. But my job is to actually lower my hotel's electric bill. So it is a problem where we as the electric company are held to meeting this 100% renewable mandate, but yet there are other gaps out there which really do not really keep everybody all working together. And that's where you see one set of customers actually being able to go do their own thing. And ultimately, it may drive bills for our other customers higher. And now you see the vicious cycle we're in.
He's describing a real rock and hard place situation. Is there anything that you can see that perhaps we haven't talked about yet that mitigates that situation or that makes a better case to some of those large customers in understanding, too, that they are caught in a situation where they're also trying to lower their bills, but aside from just giving lip service to everyone, going at this together and trying to find an energy future where we are truly sustainable and renewable, that these kinds of thwarting activities don't help the situation at all.
I think we can close the gap that Scott referred to with a policy move to make sure that 100% renewable means 100% renewable. And that would be ensuring that all of these customers that are plugged into the grid achieve our 100% renewable energy vision and the benchmarks leading up to it. So that would help a little bit. It's a matter of fairness, too. I mean, if you're plugged into the grid, if you're providing power to the grid, that should apply to you. I mean, it should apply to all customers that are attached. I would warn some of those customers, too, that if they're committing to a long-term fossil future, there's a lot of risk there. There's a market risk for sure. I mean, Hawaii is billing itself as this 100% renewable paradise. I don't think someone wants to come and stay at a hotel that's 100% fossil, And then also there's obviously the other existing, the price risks with fuel, uncertainty and, what the market's going to look like. So I think we can close that loophole, and that's been a sticking point at the legislature, is can we make sure that 100% applies to all fairly? You know, Ohana means family, means we all, no one gets left behind. But can we do that? And that's been a couple of years going now, and we just haven't gotten traction in moving that issue forward.
We have a shy caller who has a comment and wants you both to comment on this. Calling from the Big Island, said that he came there 30 years ago. To this day, there is no electricity on the street. They have no choice but to get generators. They say they still don't have electricity, and no one's really talking to them, I guess, about this from what I'm gathering. About 40 people on the street, that there is another side to this whole conversation for very small communities, is the point that's being made. This is not just to go against state policy. It's their de facto reality. What do you do with folks who are in these very small, outlying communities? And granted, you're going to try to take care of, I understand, the big stuff first. But, you know, some of these folks are feeling clearly left out of all this. Mm-hmm. And they're left out not out of perhaps wanting to be left out or feeling like, you know, they just don't want to play. But they don't have a choice.
You know, actually, there is a growing opportunity, I think, as technology develops to explore microgrids. Microgrids are actually another topic of interest this legislative session.
Right.
However, what the caller's situation is describing sounds like actually a perfect opportunity for some sort of a small-scale microgrid. So loosely defined, right, a microgrid is basically, it consists of a almost like a self-contained electric system. It needs some power production source. It needs to be able to moderate the production with the usage. It may involve a variety of types of resources. It may have storage elements. The value, the beauty of a microgrid in this particular case could be that it could be a more effective and efficient way of serving power to these 40 customers. And I'm not familiar with this exact situation, but I'm going to guess that it may be that they are in such a perhaps a remote location that the cost of actually building infrastructure to get to them may have been prohibitive. I'm assuming that that's the case. So microgrids, if designed for the right purposes, can actually be a very, very good thing.
I think we have our caller on the line now. Francis, are you there?
Yes, I am, ma'am.
Oh, good. Thank you for joining us, because I'd rather have you be part of this conversation than have to filter it through notes. So are you in a very, very remote location? I mean, the notes that I got from what you said a little earlier, is that the case, that they can't lay infrastructure
to
where you are?
Not at all. We're in Mountain View, right off of Main Street, coming into two subdivisions. They have cable only left a third way down the main road. There's no cable here. They have electric. Helco did do, like every other street or people that signed up for it and paid thousands of dollars to hook up to the grid. And I looked at the costs and everything, and, you know, fortunately I had the cash at the time, so I just made my own microgrid with batteries and solar and a backup generator, and that's what people do here. Or, conversely, a lot of people here are now just running generators because they don't know what's going to happen or if they're going to live there for a long time. I own my property, and some people are just renting. So, you know, it's just it's a different side of the issue. And I'm not trying to go, I'd love to have everyone have renewable energy and everything, but I used to install, my partner and I, he passed away, and so I stopped, but I retired now. But we used to do for 25 years, we did solar hot water, and we did solar, you know, photovoltaic systems. And I haven't seen any help from Helco. They've been an obstruction more than anything else. Sorry to say that.
No. So, Francis, this is Scott. You know, so maybe what I'd be happy to do is follow up with you offline or after this. And
why don't you make sure that we have your phone number, and then we'll pass us along and see what can happen? Because it sounds like there are some other issues going on here too. And I'm watching brows furrow as we're listening to you. But thanks so much for calling and for letting us know about your situation, which is to say that there are lots of communities that may or may not, to a greater or lesser extent, be part of this whole strategy that we all keep talking about. How much do you think is on the part of how we talk about this and how we engage our community. Jeff?
Yeah, communities have to be engaged, and we have to represent that maybe one size doesn't fit all. Scott's right. A microgrid might be a perfect situation for a Mountain View community, a microgrid that's plugged into the larger system. We see, that could be a really attractive outcome where we have a system built of microgrids that are built of nanogrids in homes that all kind of support each other when you have sun over here and clouds over here, and it really balances well. But to the point of engaging all communities, that's important in Hawaii. That's just, I think, a value that we share in Hawaii.
But it's the how we do it.
How we engage, right,
yeah.
As opposed to the traditional approach is, we're going to build this big project. What do you think? Okay, time's up. We're building to a more engaging the community. What would you like to see? We need to change the conversation, though, from building a big project or even building a small project and talking about the larger issues. I mean, for a century, we've exported our environmental impact from energy largely. We export it to where we pull up the oil, and then we export the emissions for future generations to deal with for centuries or millennia. Now we're going to face our energy a little bit more. It might be on your rooftop. It might be an offshore wind farm. It might be a battery bank. But it's going to live here, and that's okay. And we have to come to grips with if we want this 21st
century
future.
And that's the point. And that's just the point, that there's not, it'll be fine if it's over there somewhere, but it really needs to be where it's needed, and that may be in your neighborhood perhaps.
It may be, and those are going to be tough conversations, and we're going to have to make trade-offs. But again, we're going to have to accept this. It's no longer okay for us to export these problems.
Okay, we've got another caller from the Big Island. And I know, Scott, you want to comment on this a little bit, too. So let's take our caller, and then we'll get back to this, too. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 is the number from Oahu or from the neighbor islands. Or if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689 is the number to call. From the Big Island, now we're going to Philip. Aloha, Philip. Welcome to Town Square.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning.
I just wanted to mention a couple of systems that I've had an opportunity to come into awareness with. I have a chance to do a pocket hydro system using my irrigation feed. We have about an 80-foot drop on our irrigation pipe from its supply, and I'm going to be able to put a couple fish ponds and micro hydroelectric in for hopefully have a little electric car and the whole thing.
Is this just for you, or are you doing this with also other people in your community?
We have a 10-acre farm, and we'll put in a workshop when we get enough power, and there's a big nursery, and it's really pretty exciting what's possible. But what I wanted to mention that everyone has a chance to do, and it's kind of modern, ancient technology, low-tech, a combination that of things that has numerous useful elements.
Okay, so what is it exactly?
My friend in India was using a biochar electrical generator where with 2 cubic yards of wood chips, they generated 20 kWs of power all day long, and they had 2 cubic yards.
Okay, but forgive me for interrupting you, Philip, but I mean, this seems to be exactly, I think, what we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, that those around my table today were a little concerned about, that people would be finding ways to do things on their own and simply drop out from the overall conversation
further,
and need to have a strategy for the state.
Yeah, listen, Beth, and this is highly successful in India, and it's has a zero carbon footprint. It sequesters carbon in the ground with the biochar. What happens is, they take a small amount of the wood chips and fire it and recirculate the heat of the baking wood chips. They have a little oven. They bake the wood chips, and then they generate electricity off the gases that come off the wood chips, and it's zero emission. And then they buries the carbon that is the recirculate any of the gases.
I think we've got the idea, but I want to ask Jeff about this. With your engineering background and hearing, okay, this is a sort of a low-tech idea, both of you, how do you look at when you have people call up and say, well, you know, I got this great idea, and this chap is saying they're doing it in India, we're going to do it on our 10-acre farm. That seems to go back to the idea of the dropout if it's not going to be somehow enhancing the overall need to get to this renewable portfolio. On the other hand, they're also doing it in a way that isn't adding to, you know, the burden.
Yeah, well, you know, I think actually it depends on the situation of the customer. In Philip's case, he has the opportunity to take advantage of you know, pocket hydro, right? And you know, with this other technology that he's describing, there may be customers who are able to make use of it. But I see the challenge being that the vast majority of customers, at least especially here on Oahu, where we are in a heavily urbanized area, they aren't going to be able to make use of that type of technology. So I think it can be very valuable and a potentially good resource for certain customers, but we're going to end up needing to chase a whole variety of these types of options to make this work.
That's exactly right. I think it's going to be an all-of-the-above strategy, all-of-the-above being indigenous, you know, renewable mm-hmm. resources.
As long as everybody doesn't simply drop out and say, I found a way for us to do it, and the heck with everybody else.
True. Although I think, Philip, sounds like it's a somewhat unique situation, you know, with a great 10-acre farm and the option to do that, you know, small hydro. The biochar is excellent. It's great because you have a number of values there, from sequestering carbon to replenishing the soil. So some pretty cool solutions. And if he has the opportunity to play with that stuff, I think we all benefit.
Which is to say that when you have different communities, as you just talked about a moment, Scott, what's going to work in a very urbanized setting like Honolulu is not necessarily going to work elsewhere, and vice versa. But if it works for you and it's not causing any detriment to the overarching plan to get to us, to get to where we need to get to by 2045, then, well, good on you.
That's certainly positive. Yeah.
All right.
Although that Bethann, that does segue back to the question you raised earlier,
right,
which is the broader
the
community engagement.
Yeah.
Right. So it is also a growing issue where, as we chart our course towards 100% and we have a variety of resources or resource options, more and more that you will start to see the discussions among communities that say, hey, why that resource and why here in my neighborhood? A long time ago when I started my career at Hawaiian Electric, I used to be in the environmental permitting and compliance side of the house. And back then, we were still building fossil fuel power plants. Not in my backyard was just, you know, that was alive and well. And, you know, for understandable reasons, I would never have thought 20 years ago that I would be still working at Hawaiian Electric facing now, not in my backyard, with respect to renewable projects. But it is actually, that is the reality that I see for us going into the future, that more and more our communities have to get more engaged and we have to hear their voice as we consider all these alternatives. You know, how I think, Jeff, you mentioned earlier how we engage is very important. I would actually say that today I do not believe that many of our customers really, really, truly understand and are engaged in this discussion of why 100% renewables.
Well, we're going to ask you that right now. I mean, if you're listening to us, and we know there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who are listening to this, are you really engaged in this? And what is your commitment to renewable energy? Is it in just a lot of conversation? Or what are you willing to do to be able to bring this state to where it says it wants to be by 2045? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're going to go now to Joe calling us from Honolulu. He says he's been on solar for about 8 months and noticed that with the same amount of people, actually, to fewer people, consumption, according to his HECO bill, has gone up. His bill still is high after installing solar, and he's calling to find out why. Okay, Joe, you got Jeff Michelina here and Scott Seo. What's going on with your bill? Is that it? Did I get that right?
Yeah, well, thanks for taking my call. You know, I appreciate the engagement of these guys, you know, being on the radio and trying to engage with the public. But the truth of the matter, you know, with Hawaiian Electric and a lot of other companies, it's politics. I mean, this is that's what it comes down to. And I don't want to get into that subject as much as I wanted to find out, you know, why, for instance, you know, they're asking for the community to be engaged and not to drop out. But, you know, they're not in our shoes. You know, we don't, we're not getting the salaries from Hawaiian Electric, and we're not running their business. But, for instance, I have friends, and myself included, and I am a victim of that, where my application was approved, okay, for the net zero, for the net metering system, and it sat there for 11 months approved. And I had to go into Hawaiian Electric office, threatened with a reporter to get my application off the table. And they wouldn't give me an address. They wouldn't give me anybody to talk to. They would not transfer me to any office. And at the same time, they say, well, we can't disclose that information to you, who you're going to talk to. You have to talk to a clerk at the Hawaiian Electric office. Is that right? I mean, is that how you guys want us to engage? And once I threatened, the next day, the very next day, it was approved. Now, my application is approved. I put $57,000 into a solar system, the best I could buy, okay? The best I could buy. My consumption has diminished because I have two less people in my house. But in the Hawaii electric system, it shows that I'm consuming more energy than ever. How is that possible?
Okay, let's see if we can get an answer for you.
Well, so Joe, on your first comment about the, I guess, how you were treated or perhaps, you know, trying to get your net metering application approved, to me that sounds like a communications problem that we had on our side. It really should not be the case that any customer of ours has to feel like they are not getting served well. So I don't know the specifics of that particular of your situation, but if that was the case, then that means we have to up our game in terms of our customer service. I mean, that's as simple as that's concerned.
But to the other part where he says that he's concerned about, you know, the bill, that it's still
as far as your electric consumption, again, I'm not sure exactly why that is the case. And if anything, again, I would offer to follow up with you on that.
So leave us your phone number, and we'll be happy to do that afterward.
I mean, sometimes I don't know if it's a metering issue. I don't know if it's a billing issue. So we'll follow up with you.
All right, Joe, make sure you leave us your phone number. Going to go off to Richard calling us from Aina Haina. Another homeowner says that he has a full solar array. Both, I guess, he and his spouse drive electric vehicles. They're doing as much as possible to renew. He's asking, how does HECO move toward the distributed energy grid, because so many individual homes and generation points and transfer go back to the grids? He wants to have more questions answered about that. Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Thank you very much, first of all, for even having this program on the air. I think it's fantastic that we can talk about it and get such information out to the public. I guess my question is you know, we've got a large number of homes that have solar, and hopefully it'll be growing in the future. A large number of folks driving electric vehicles and sort of utilizing that model. But my question is really on the storage side, you know, because I'm interested in doing battery storage for my house, and I can understand the concern that, you know, I'm sort of taking away a resource perhaps from the grid at large. Is there an approach where we could look at integrating individual homes, not only as generation points, but also as storage points, and then be able to take load off of the grid, either in an individual home situation or like as a microgrid?
Okay. I think both want answers. Jeff, you want to go first?
I'll just say, Richard, good on you. I mean, great to hear that someone's doing so much and looking forward to doing more.
Yeah, I want Richard's house.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the two EVs. And, you know, we're really looking forward to an evolution And I think the utility is beginning to make that evolution, and their recent plans kind of suggest that. But really, you know, evolving into more of a systems operator, an integrator of energy. So customers like you, you both provide energy, you use some energy, and you also provide these services. Imagine if your electric vehicles can be used to help balance the grid, the renewable energy resources on the grid, or your new storage provides some of those services for, you know, frequency and voltage and the like. And you are one of those participants. But you should really value from or you should be compensated for those values that you provide to the grid. And that's the future we'd like to see, is really, you know, the kind of these smart customers, smart homes that are part of this larger system. And folks like you that are early adopters and are really driving this should be rewarded for that behavior as being part of this larger system.
Yeah, Richard, this is Scott. I agree with Jeff. You know, the future is really going to be where, you know, we need to be able to somehow tap the value that sits out there among our customers. You know, when we have, I mean, in the old days, the utility used to do all the investment in various resources and facilities. And now it is absolutely the case where our customers more and more are coming up with the money and the capital investment. If you invest in a storage system at your house, you know, you're doing that primarily to serve your needs. Is there untapped storage potential that we could compensate you and use that to support the broader grid? Absolutely. So that is clearly a model that we support. In fact, we're actually exploring that very model with an energy storage company called STEM. Because, again, why have duplication of resources? You know, that's just going to be inefficient. On these island systems, we have to chase all these different resource potentials.
I mean, that seems to be the whole point about the Tesla and SolarCity merger, and looking at how do you charge a house, how do you charge your car, how do you integrate the whole thing for an individual, and then how to integrate all of that within neighborhoods.
Right. I mean, they're on the cutting edge of that, looking at the whole systems. You said holistic, the whole systems approach. And for a company like that, they want to see, you know, can they provide multiple, you know, value streams and revenue streams for the company. That's where things are heading. And if they're in the battery business, I mean, batteries that go in the cars, batteries that go in the walls, batteries that go to the utility, I mean, it's all similar technology.
All right. We've got a couple of Daniels on the line. We're going to take the first one from Maui, calling us from Lahaina. And are you there, Daniel? I understand that you're having an issue.
Yes, I am. Aloha.
Okay.
I'm an early adopter, photovoltaic electric vehicle guy over here in Lahaina. And back in 2010, when I put my photovoltaic on, you know, it was a net metering system and all that. And right now, we're fortunate enough to be looking at another home, and I want to put photovoltaic on there. And I'm being told that Maui Electric will not allow us to backfeed into the grid any longer. We have to put in our storage, which is almost motivating me to say, well, then why would I be connected to the grid if I can't benefit from backfeeding into them? Either I misunderstood what the contractor told me, or that's the way they're doing it over here now, and sounds kind of counterproductive to me, that we're not allowed to backfeed. They want me to store the electricity myself. Just and then another point I just heard over the thing is we also do have a jump start, which is a situation over here where we can backfeed off the car into the grid from our original home, which puts the question, will that system be utilized in the new home, or because of this new rule about not backfeeding and having to store it ourselves? You know, it sounds like we're going backwards.
Well, Daniel, this is Scott. You know, it's clearly over time we've evolved. And it may be that, in fact, you said 2010 was when you put your initial system in?
I don't think Daniel's
there. Oh, okay, okay. Well, I think I heard Daniel say 2010. So in 2010, that was actually a great time to be doing net metering because it was still early in the overall program. The program had existed before then. But that's when people really started catching on to net metering and making those investments. So back in 2010, we were able to accommodate almost every single net metering system that came through our doors. It wasn't until maybe the 2013 timeframe that we started to see the pressures on the electric system in the localized neighborhoods where the amount of solar that was being installed was starting to create some real concerns from a technical and operational perspective. And that's when we had to adopt new technology rules. The overall process of reviewing these applications became more complicated. Fast forward to today. We are, unfortunately, in a situation where, in general, in order to go forward with installing more solar, we do have to put certain restrictions on what can be done in terms of backfeeding into the grid. So the story of how we actually came from 2010 to where we are today, actually, it's a very positive one, because we went from practically nothing in 2010 to being, frankly, the leaders across the nation in terms of, solar per customer. I don't know, Jeff, if you had to.
Yeah, I was going to say that this is the challenge the utility faces, is we need to move quickly to enable, customer choice like this. Because, Daniel, I mean, you could be looking at, maybe we do want to go off the grid. And, again, we can't blame you. I mean, if you want to make that choice. But we hope that the systems, the regulations are in place that allow you to plug in as soon as possible, provide that value back to the grid. But here's where I mentioned before the market pressure, and I think market pressure is our friend in this case, to keep the competition up, make sure customers have choices. An ideal system is everyone's plugged in, we're working together, but we can't blame folks who want to do the right thing, and if they don't have that option today, to go it alone.
Well, especially when they've been marketed to in such a way and believing that they were doing something good. You heard him say, we are an early adopter, we did all this. Several people have been saying that they've been trying to do what they thought was the right thing, only to find themselves often thwarted in the process, and then wondering kind of, what gives. Meanwhile, the pressure to create a statewide system in which we're all moving together and not having people drop out is equally as pressured. And that's kind of where we find ourselves today and why we're having this conversation. We're going to get to some of the bills in just a moment, but I want to bring Daniel, our other Daniel, calling us from the Big Island, from Volcano. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You've got a question for us?
Yes. Why not look at a publicly owned utility company as Kauai? The Federal Reserve System, I think a lot of people have problems with it being private. It should be public because it acts in a private interest. It does not act in a public interest if it's privately owned. The same thing with electric. It's just a paper currency, water currency. A good example was Portland Power and Light was turned over to Enron. I think everybody knows the rest of that story.
All right, let's get some comment for you. I was waiting for someone to bring up the issue. Why don't we have a private co-op, or why don't we do something a la Kauai? And you did it, Daniel. Thank you. Jeff, you want to answer him?
I think people are looking at that. Blue Planet Foundation hasn't really taken a position on those issues. They're definitely...
But lawmakers certainly were. I mean, we heard a lot about that last year.
Yeah, they have. And I think it's worthy to look at. Is this a public good? Is this something that could be well run by a public board of directors that reports to their membership? Kauai is doing some pretty radical things. They're moving very quickly. Although I'll say for a good amount of time, they had some of the highest rates in the state, and they were behind on efficiency and renewables. It looks like that corner has turned, though, and it's all up to the board of directors and an active membership to make progress happen.
Scott, anything to add to that, or we're going to move on with more
problems? I mean, the fact of the matter is, when we talk about designing and operating an electric system, you still have the fundamentals in place in terms of investing in the grid, operating it safely, reliably, and so on. So that doesn't matter, who owns the system. When it comes to the question of should it be a privately, for-profit company like Hawaiian Electric, but yet we are regulated, versus having it become more like a government entity or a member-owned co-op, that's where you really get to the questions of, what are you really gaining? The big elephant in this discussion, in this room, I guess, is the privately owned utility purposely designing its programs or putting so-called hurdles for others to do things on the electric grid? RPUC has, over the last few years, set up a variety of different regulatory structures where, for example, we are under what's called a decoupling mechanism. So we, the electric company, no longer make more money if we sell more electricity. And that was actually put in place purposely to get rid of any reason why the utility would try and stand in the way of customers producing their own electricity. So I use that as an example to say that we believe that our current structure is working. When I am looking at a variety of policy issues or bills, I am actually trying to look at it through the lens of, is this serving the greater good of all customers? Are we actually going to be able to be efficient in achieving the long-range goals? I obviously am a company man. I've been here for 23 years, so I believe that we can do the job and we can do the job better. That's
so very quickly
for debate.
I want to ask you too. Yeah. Although that has been debated, and certainly we've been through a long journey and the whole issue with NextEra and all of that, but is that still your idea too, that we need to have this to be with the utility and the utility has to be a player in this in the way that Scott describes?
Well, there are two things. Does the utility need to exist? We think probably yes. It's probably going to be the architecture in the future. The role might be dramatically different, more of a wires integrator. Now, the ownership question, which Scott is addressing, I think that's an open question. Scott's right. I would also point out, though, you have to look at the economically efficient, you know, management of a utility and where those, you know, essentially profits go. Currently, the profits, I think last year, maybe $140 million or so, go to shareholders. In Kauai's case, they go as dividends or patronage or whatever they call it back to the members. So I think that's another thing to look at is where does the money.
Okay. We're going to take a few more callers because I'm watching time move short here. Going to another Big Island caller, David calling from Glenwood. Aloha, David.
Hey, aloha. Thank you for the call. I just wanted to see why there isn't much conversation about biodiesel, biomass. I mean, it's basically natural substances. It's all kinds of anything that you want to use can be converted to energy that's like organic material. And there ought to be, and I think lots of people are researching this and developing it, a biodiesel crop that's usable.
Well, we've had this conversation sort of in summer in part for a very long time. Forgive me for interrupting you, David, but he sounds like someone who's, again, in a Big Island community where they're looking at alternatives where it's not necessarily going to be something that everybody can do. And I think, as you said a little earlier, Jeff, and certainly Scott, you've said too, that this is not a one-size-fits-all. But in general, we're not talking any big biomass plants.
Well, I think actually, to me, okay, so I was formerly the system operator. And when I think about a resource like biomass, you know, to me, actually, that is an area that I actually believe we really need to explore further. The challenge with large-scale biomass or biodiesel production has always been one of cost, of certain issues in terms of, you know, competition for land.
And being able to produce it successfully
and
here.
And being able to make it work, right? But from my old lens of being the system operator, a resource like biomass or biodiesel actually is tremendously valuable because it allows me to use that in what we call a firm generating source, right? It's something that I can actually control. It's something that I can use to keep the grid in balance. So it's actually potentially a very valuable resource.
Anything you want to add, or shall we move on?
Just say I'm a biodiesel proponent. I've been driving unfortunately, it's one of those VWs, but it's a 100% biodiesel car. And I think that's another piece of our challenge that we need to address is transportation and local resources that can be put into our.
Well, and we had a bill to do that this time around to be able to say, okay, if we're going to look at the overarching goal of 2045, you have a renewable portfolio standard by then. Well, shouldn't that include transportation too? But that bill doesn't seem to be.
The bill is alive. That's the good news.
Yeah.
The bad news is it needs some tweaking.
Yeah. And a little bit more.
And I think this is something where we're all on the same page. Certainly we agree with the utility that we largely need to electrify our transportation system. Also biofuels, that'll be a role, and I think hydrogen will also play a role. But it's an important, I think, point to really grasp that when we electrify transportation, it's easier to solve these two problems together than separately. Having batteries on wheels essentially provides balancing for the grid. It can provide some storage, as we heard from our Daniel and Maui. It can really help us absorb more of that solar in the middle of the day, so more people can put PV on the rooftops. It's really just an asset, and we need to view it that way. As we move away from gasoline, we're replacing that with indigenous resources.
We're going to move off now to a caller new to Hawaii, Alan calling from Kihei. Aloha, Alan.
Aloha. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just got a couple of comments. Like Elon Musk is way ahead of everybody on a lot of this. But we've had some really good conversation today. I just wanted to make more of a comment. I've never been anywhere that I've seen so much electricity wasted with incandescent and halogen light bulbs in air-conditioned space. And there's like supermarkets that make their own ice to sell in the air-conditioned space of the supermarket. And, you know, if you did the math on that, I'm sure it would be outrageous. So, you know, where I come from, the power costs about half as much here, and I wouldn't dream of doing that. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Alan, thank you. I mean, inconsistencies island-wide, we know that, and statewide, too, that you kind of walk and think, why does it need to be, you know, 63 degrees in here or whatever it may be? Why can't we get some of these systems? In part because some of them are old and some of them need to be upgraded and they haven't been well integrated. And nobody foresaw this future, I mean, in part, and that you can't just simply say, well, that's bad, you have to fix it. How do you fix it is what we've all been trying to do for a very long time.
I'm certainly glad he raised that issue, though, because efficiency, energy efficiency, that unsexy energy efficiency is really the fundamental foundation to achieving 100%. We think it's our true bridge to achieving 100% renewable, and that's maddening. I would encourage you to get in touch with Blue Planet and share some of those stories. We'd love to work on that. Another measure we worked on this session was to deal with just a gross inefficiency that everyone's experienced when you've walked down Kalakaua Avenue in Waikiki and all of the boutique doors are open, air conditioning the sidewalk. This is something that
you get the blast as you walk by.
Right, and it's huge. The temperature is usually inversely proportional to the prices in the store. This is something that New York solved a couple of years ago with a law prohibiting, sideway air conditioning. You have to close the door if you air condition. That bill, had a hearing or so, but, obviously the regular folks came out against it. Something so simple as just prohibiting us from this egregious waste of energy. We have to get these fundamentals right if we hope to get to 100%.
Before we move along, I want to ask you, of the bills that are still alive, what do you think has the most merit? I mean, there are a couple that you were following, but there were others that, especially the Hawaii Ratepayer Protection Act. I mean, that was one of the ones I know you were following.
That is, and I think we'll have maybe a little disagreement, but it's a measure to put in place performance-based rate making and performance-based incentives. Today, Hawaiian Electric doesn't necessarily get rewarded for putting in a new solar farm or a wind farm. Those are just costs that are passed through. We think they should benefit. Their shareholders should benefit from such an investment. So this would move away somewhat from our current system of, they get rewarded in how much they invest in the system to they get rewarded for things that we want as a society or achieving our clean energy goals.
Right, but there would also be penalties, too, if that didn't happen. You've got to have
penalties.
Both sides of the ledger. So, Scott, yeah, taking a look at that one, which is still very much alive.
Well, yeah, and actually, our position on performance-based rate making, we support it. But to your points, it really should have both the rewards as well as the penalties if we fail, right? And so far, or maybe historically, a lot of times when we talk about having the rewards or the incentives as well as the disincentives, a lot of times we've been on the short end of the discussion when people say, well, your incentive is not to get penalized, right? So it is something that we actually agree, allow us the ability to be able to get rewarded if we do our job and if we exceed expectations.
Well, we're going to see what's going to happen because that bill is up for decision-making this afternoon at 2 o'clock. We'll see what happens with that one. But before we take perhaps one last call, I also want to ask you about HB 903 because that was one that we talked about on the conversation earlier in the week. And looking at this idea of how do you recalculate what the renewable portfolio is based on. Is it, it has up to this point been sales, but really shouldn't it be generation? Shouldn't it take into account how all of this is produced? This bill has not been scheduled. I mean, it was deleted from the schedule on 223 and seemingly has not been rescheduled again. So it looks like this one is not going to make it.
You know, so when this bill was first introduced, it was actually introduced last year in terms of so-called fixing the math of the RPS, the Renewable Portfolio Standard calculation. At that time, I've been the testifier for Hawaiian Electric on this bill. I basically said, you know, we're okay with making the change in math, right, in terms of changing it to be a percent of generation as opposed to a percent of sales. We're okay with that. However, the RPS still does include what customers do on their side. And our biggest challenge was that, hey, we don't have control over customers who decide to go down the pathway of producing their own electricity using fossil fuels. That is alive and well in terms of the real opportunity for customers to do that. And in this current session, what we saw was the bill being introduced. It had the mathematical change. And we're saying, hey, we're okay with the math change, but there has to be a backstop to close this loophole on fossil generation happening on the customer side of the meter. Because otherwise, Hawaiian Electric, we are never going to meet our compliance requirements.
Jeff?
It's a matter of fairness. And it's so frustrating as advocates where you have a bill that has so much consensus and then it somehow disappears from an agenda.
And is there any reason why or anything? I mean, we hear rumors through the wind and we don't want to, you know, rumor monger, but why this hasn't gotten a hearing when it seems to have such broad agreement?
Well, the bogey in the room is those who are involved in trying to develop those fossil fuel systems on the customer side of the meter. You know, I don't want to say names, but it involves fossil fuel producers and suppliers. It involves the developers of fossil-based cogen systems, combined heat and power systems. You know, I get it. Again, I mentioned how earlier our customers are really trying to do what they need to do to manage their businesses and lower their electric bills. But again, this gets back to a broader, higher level of state energy policy discussion. Are we all in this together? Do we all subscribe that we absolutely as a state want to get off fossil fuels? If that is the case, then everybody should be playing their role. And it's just not fair for other customers to end up saying, hey, I have to pay a higher electric bill because the bigger customer down the street installed a fossil generator way cheaper.
I don't think there's a lot of disagreement from you there on that one.
Not at all.
Okay, but as we have very few minutes left before we have to say goodbye, if we are looking at where we are right now with the bills that are related to how we move this agenda forward this session, what are your top ones that you think are actually crucial, whether they have, you know, gotten to the point where they've yet to be heard? I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with the Hawaii Ratepayer Protection Act. That's later today at 2 o'clock. But as you just generally look at it, how do you gauge this session so far from what you've seen?
We have a ways to go. You know, it's probably still the second quarter here. But our priority is moving that 100% renewable transportation bill.
Which came out yesterday. Yeah.
Which came out yesterday. It needs a lot of work. Right now it just says 5% by 2025. That's 95% short of the goal. And I just can't underscore enough how critical it is to have that North Star. We saw this with the electricity, with 100% renewable electricity. You know, that went from impossible to inevitable, and it has revolutionized planning. We need to do the same for transportation.
All right. You got about 30 seconds, Scott.
Generally, the bills that I see, we need to make sure that they're fair to all customers. I see some very self-serving bills. There's a bill for microgrids, University of Hawaii doing their own thing.
That's
we are actively working with the University of Hawaii system to see what we can do to help them. That kind of bill takes us the wrong way.
All right. This has still got to be everybody in the canoe together. All right. I want to thank both of you, Jeff Michelina, Scott Tsiu. Come back. We'll take a look at this when we get further into the session's second half. Thanks for joining us today for Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.